Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com will be with us later in the program. We got a lot of things on the Titans front to get into with him. Joe, we will get into the Nashville Predators here in just a second. They get a win last night against Colorado, which not a lot of teams have done so far this year. And they've been doing a little bit more winning as of late, so we'll get into that. We have heard from a Steelers fan on the text line who says, I believe that the game is past Mike Tomlin. As a Steelers fan, it's rinse and repeat. It's the definition of insanity. I understand the Titans have not had the best coaching staff since they've come to Tennessee, but I really don't think Tomlin is the answer. There's no reason the Steelers had a four-game lead this year in the division, and within 6 weeks they were fighting for their life to be on top. It's ridiculous when you have a coach that people claim to be one of the greatest.
Yeah. Okay, if you want to say it's because the game is quote-unquote passing by, not because, again, they're getting old on defense and they're not nearly as great as they were, not because Aaron Rodgers is old and is not nearly as great as he was. You can blame it on the coach. I get it. This is why I think there's the change of scenery thing is a good idea. If I'm an NFL franchise, I'm lining up to hire the guy immediately. Okay? I mean, the game is passing by. Do you think that, like, he hasn't kept up with – I mean, all these guys, all they do all day is they copy each other schematically. I mean, it's just – he has not had the pieces to win more than he's won.
No, and having said that, I understand if you're a Steelers fan. I mean, he's been the head coach since 2007. That's a long time.
I agree.
And they have not had – they've not had any postseason success in a long time at this point. I mean, you know –
They haven't been very good.
They haven't been very good. And they've been good enough to either sneak into the playoffs or be right on the edge of the playoff race every year, right? And to his credit, I mean, we've talked about this before, but they've never had a losing season under him, which when you've been the head coach in the National Football League since 2007 is incredible.
It
right?
is. And I get that Steelers fans are sick of it, sick of hearing about it. Great. But we never win anything big. I get it. But, yes, it is incredible.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And I think it tells you a little something about, again, when that's your floor, again, Mike Vrabel, coach of the year, at the toast of the league. Well, he lost 18 of his last 24 here in Nashville. Was he a crappy coach then? Did he all of a sudden get stupid? And, oh, my God. What is this? Is that zone blocking or, I don't know, gap blocking? What's cover three?
What's a zero blitz? Does that mean no one blitzes?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, look. The Steelers have been very good to great on defense, and we're seeing that somewhat erode. And then there's also personnel stuff, and that always gets into that too. It's like, okay, well, you're telling me that Tomlin doesn't have a strong voice and all that stuff? I'm sure he does. So there's been some mistakes, and I said the same thing about Vrabel when he was here, right? Like Vrabel, it's not like Vrabel was completely innocent in all the in some of the mistakes John Robinson made,
sure,
right? But I mean. The guy can coach, in my opinion, and I know that people will be all over him if he's elsewhere. And, yeah, I mean, someone on the text line is out, now, Steelers fan, be careful what you wish for. When it comes down to it, Mike Tomlin, defensive coach, kind of boring, all that stuff, but he's, like, solid. Again, they had – and They didn't do anything. They lost to Brady in that one title game. But I'm just saying – like, they had the most fun, explosive offense in the NFL for a stretch there with the Killer Bees, right?
Yep.
That was all Tomlin. I mean, it's just all these coaches are dependent on the guys who actually play the game to make them look smart or stupid, more than anything.
Again, Kuharski will be with us coming up here in just a few minutes, and we will get into the coaching search with him as well as we talk all things Tennessee Titans. The Preds get a win last night against the Colorado Avalanche, which does not happen very often this year. Joe, it looked like the Preds were going to get a regulation win against the Colorado Avalanche, which has only happened twice this year around the league. Cale Makar tied it with 8 seconds left. The Predators did win the game in the shootout. They survived a couple of chances in overtime, a couple of huge saves from UC Saros there. Colorado 21-2-7 on the season. So the Predators getting a win against the number one team in the NHL. They're playing better. They have won five of their last seven. they are, you know, playing, I think, more consistently better hockey than they were earlier in the year, obviously, when the wins are coming that way. And, you know, it's not perfect. I mean, they'll have a game like they did on Saturday where they basically got run out of the building by the Carolina Hurricanes. They got Colorado again coming up on Saturday this week. So, you know, the more you play Colorado, it's not great. I mean, you don't love playing the Colorado Avalanche, particularly on the road, like they will be coming up. But they are playing better. So I wonder what this means, because when you look at the standings, the answer so far is it hasn't meant a whole lot. Heading into the game last night, they were the last place team in the NHL. They vaulted Vancouver last night, so they are no longer the last place team in the NHL. They are 31st at the moment. So I don't think big picture-wise anything has really changed in terms of what the outlook is probably going to be this year. But there's no doubt they're playing better at the moment. So I wonder if you're a Predators fan, like, what are you feeling right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess it's somewhat similar to, although it's obviously way earlier in the year and there's way more hockey to play, but it's somewhat similar to the some Titans fans are like, yes, I want my team to win. I want to feel good. This is what I do. I'm a fanatic of this team. I want them to win. So some Preds fans are probably like, yeah, good. This is good. They're competitive. They've got some stuff. They're figuring some stuff out. How much of the fan base is like, please do not convince Barry that he's not selling. Please don't. I mean, I hate to be cynical, but I mean, that's got to be on the minds of people. But again, if you're a fan of the Preds, is it not hard to, like, root against them? Or even if not rooting against them, like, is it not hard to not be somewhat happy when you see them play well?
Yeah, I mean, especially against a team like that last night. Now, look,
like Saros,
it wasn't like they came out there and dominated last night. I mean, Saros made 39 saves. Frankly, like, I thought early in the game, I was like, they might get 9 goals scored on them tonight because he was leaky. You know, he let up, there's rebounds all over the place. And to his credit, he dialed it in as the game went on. He got a lot better. He made some huge saves. You know, the second period, though, the Predators were holding on for dear life. And to their credit, they held on. So it wasn't like they just went out there and dominated last night or anything. But they're winning games. Like, they won a game in Florida last week. And I know Florida, when you look at the standings, they're not very good right now. They've got, you know, a billion people hurt. And they're going to get some of those guys coming back. But I thought it was just a really gutsy effort from the Predators last week in Florida to go down there and get that win. And clearly, like, if you want to connect some dots here, you know, ever since Barry Trotz basically called him out that he needed more from the players, he's gotten more from the players. Now, how sustainable is it? I don't think very, but they are playing better hockey. Like, the one thing that's pretty clear, the line of Stamkos, O'Reilly, and Evangelista, for whatever reason, you know, they've tried a ton of different combinations with Stamkos throughout the last couple of years. This one's working. Like, Stamkos is playing really well. O'Reilly's playing well. Evangelista is playing right up there with probably the best hockey he's ever played. And I'm not saying that those guys are, like, totally carrying them right now, but they're doing a really good job. And that has been good to see, those three kind of play as well as they have together.
Yeah, especially, I mean, Evangelista, again, is one of those guys who, I mean, it's you know, like, a couple of years ago, you thought things were going one way, and they have the contract thing coming in. It's like, is he going to be, you know, is he going to be part of the answer here for this team? So, like, that's someone that that he's among that group that you really want to see more from to hope that, like, he can be part of the solution at some point. Although, again, you know, whatever they may be entering, then you get into, like, okay, so how long are they going to be in that? But, yeah, I mean, that's a good thing. Some of these guys, you know, like Stamkos, I guess you like that too. Of course you like that too, but, I mean, it's a different situation, right? I mean,
yes.
As opposed to one of your homegrown, still youngish guys.
Well, they're having some young guys come in and start to contribute. I mean, we've talked a lot about Matt Wood. He's, I think, second in the NHL among rookies in goal scoring right now, so that's good to see. Reed Schaefer, great move last night, like a power move where he just basically crushed Cale Makar in the corner and got the puck and just drove it right to the net and scored. And it's like, okay, you know, I don't know how good Reed Schaefer's going to end up being. I don't think Reed Schaefer's going to be, you know, some top six player or anything. But those type of plays, that's good to see your young guys make. So you're seeing some young guys come in and start to play. You know, Svechkov, I thought, had one of his better games last night, so that was good to see. I think you're going to see some more young guys coming up. You know, Barry Trotz talked with DVD yesterday. We're going to get into that here in just a few minutes in terms of some of the stuff that's floating around out there right now. But, you know, a lot of people on the text line right now are saying, you know what, it was brutal earlier in the year, and at least right now they're a little bit more fun to watch, so you'll take that. At the moment, we do have some people saying, you know, still pretty apathetic to what the Preds are doing right now. But there's no doubt it's been more palatable over the last couple of weeks than it was.
Yeah, and so, I mean, yeah, just even to just end or pause the Brunette stuff, right? Yeah. Which, I mean, it probably should be anyway, but at least people can talk about things other than what kind of things can they do to show that they care or to show accountability, right?
They're actually playing good hockey.
Yep.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We will get to some comments from Barry Trotz that he had yesterday on DVD coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Let me ask you about Stamkos and O'Reilly on the ice. They've been on a line lately with Luke Evangelista, and it seems that that line has elevated the games of all three players. Why has that been a successful mix?
Well, I think, you know, on every good line, there's you know, there's a playmaker, and it's driven. I think Ryan O'Reilly drives a lot out of the offensive stuff. He's very intelligent. He's got a great stick. He sees the ice pretty well. You got a finisher in Stammer, and he can still pass the puck, and he still makes some plays. And I just think with Luke and Ryan have had something good. You know, it's helped Luke's development this year. I think Luke's played much better after probably the first 10 games. He's sort of caught up to the rest of the group. And there's a playmaker on there. There's a guy that's got dog in him, you know, in O'Reilly. And then you got a real good, smart, you know, future Hall of Famer in Steven Stamkos to finish. So it's got all the elements for a good line when they're all working, and they're all working.
That's Barry Trotz on with DVD yesterday discussing that top line that we talked about. Stamkos, O'Reilly, Evangelista playing pretty well for the Predators right now. Joe, it is rumor season out there in the NHL. We're a couple months out from the NHL trading deadline, and you've got O'Reilly's name floating around everywhere. You got Stamkos kind of floating around everywhere. So a lot of people have made the connection with the New Jersey Devils. Trotz did say yesterday that when you look at those guys, it's his job to listen right now. And he never outright said that he's had conversations with the Devils or anybody else specifically about, like, O'Reilly and what that could look like. But I think we all know. Like, their teams are calling, and I think O'Reilly's probably going to be at the top of that list. I know some Predators fans look at the production from Stamkos, or maybe more specifically the lack thereof, over the last couple of years and wonder, you know, why would teams be interested in that with the number that he's at? But I'm just telling you, like, I've talked about this before. If he's in a place where he's got people that can get him the puck, he's still going to be pretty productive. And right now, that doesn't exist here. Now, like, to their credit, like I said, that line has looked pretty good. But I'm really interested to see here over the next couple of months if it doesn't, you know, if they don't go on some crazy run here, which is what it's going to take to get back into the thick of some sort of race at this point. If they don't do that, and I don't think anybody has the expectation that they're going to do that, what does the sell-off look like? And how many of these guys are gone? I mean, I think we would all assume O'Reilly, Stamkos gone. Somebody called about Marchessault. Is he gone? Like, what's that? What's the depth of what that's going to look like? It's going to be really interesting to see.
Yeah, it's a great question. Do you have a, like, if you're Barry Trotz, do you have a almost like a cap? Like, I can't completely gut the place, you know? Or is it just like, hey, if each individual deal is attractive enough, I mean, that's what we're doing. We're selling.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'd probably lean that way. I mean, look, I think people are going to call on all those guys I just mentioned. Doesn't mean you necessarily have to make a deal. But, I think people are going to call on Michael McCarron. And I said this last year. I think they got calls on Michael McCarron last year. He's in a contract year, so the Predators could re-sign him. And I know there are Predators fans out right now, as I'm talking about this, being like, Yeah, what are they going to get from Michael McCarron? I'm just telling you. Like a fourth line guy who wins a ton of faceoffs, who's really good on the penalty kill, they will get more from him than you think they will.
Yeah.
Because of the way that he plays.
But then I also, yeah. Again, it's like with any of this stuff, you don't know when you get out on the other side. Yep. No one plans for this to be 3, 4, or 5 years.
Right.
Sometimes it goes more than that. But you also you do need to ask yourself that, right? Like, who do we want to be part of this on the other side? Or is it just a pure – it's just a completely different team?
It's a good question. I just think that's something over the next – and they're playing better hockey now. And maybe they delay this for a little bit. I don't know. I know that's not what a lot of Predators fans want to hear. But I think at some point, even with them playing better, you're going to see some moves start to get made. And I just wonder when that clock starts and how deep into the pool Barry Trotz is willing to go there. We welcome in our good friend Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com to the program. PK, how we doing?
Good morning. I'm well. You sound very energetic. I'm highly impressed driving you.
Thank you.
You have any hockey takes?
Joe sounds like he was up all night.
Oh, I'm feeling great. Thank you. You got any hockey takes?
No, none.
Okay. No thoughts on this topic?
There's not enough space generally, and there's not enough space at the Olympics.
Here's a take. Don't be starting any more games at 8:52 local time.
Yeah, how are the ratings?
I don't know. It's a good question.
How was the crowd?
Crowd was actually pretty good. I was kind of surprised by how good the crowd was.
People love a night out in there.
A game that started at 9 o'clock.
You know that.
Yeah,
it was more of the beer guzzling crowd than the
although I did
parents
see,
and kids crowd.
I did see a few kids out there. I was like, wow, that kid's like 3, and he's just out here partying at 11:30. Good stuff.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Good for him.
PK, the Titans get a win in Cleveland. You were there to witness this win. Haven't been a whole lot of wins to witness over the last couple of years. What did you make of the way the Titans played, and specifically the limitation of what Myles Garrett was able to do in that game?
This team went to Cleveland with a plan, which is something in itself, executed the plan, stuck with the plan, and got a result. Fancy that. It proves these things can happen. Very, very impressive. The odds of them doing it again, not that the game is shaped the same in San Francisco, but I wrote, you know, every time they do something good, every time they do an element of the game well, we've not really seen them sustain it. So, you know, it would be wonderful if for the offensive line that was a pivot point. We wound up looking back and say, hey, remember how Cleveland started all of this? But, you know, need to see it to believe that it's the start of something instead of an aberration. But for one day, they were what, you know, we thought they could be maybe during training camp and over the summer when they did the revamping and all of that. I didn't think Tony Pollard, I don't think any of us thought Tony Pollard had that left in him. But when you can get some first downs, and I think Corey Levin really deserves a shout out. He's outplayed Lloyd Cushenberry. I think he's central at the energy in the run game. And, of course, Nick Holtz pretty much said, you know, he expects when Cushenberry's healthy, they'll put him right back in the lineup.
You're just not going to admit that Mike McCoy completely destroyed your buddy Jim Schwartz? I mean, were you going to give some flowers? Come on.
Good job by – I just said good job by everybody.
That's not enough.
The head coach organizes everybody. Look, are you going to do the thing like, oh, I've underrated Mike McCoy all this time because he had a good Sunday, and all those other Sundays when I crushed him because he was terrible, it turns out he wasn't terrible. No, he was terrible all those Sundays.
Well, I'm just saying.
He had a good day.
Well, you need to – I want you to call balls and strikes. So you have no problem with that when he sucks. I just complimented the entire
organization.
I need a little more than that.
That's headed by the head coach.
But see, you're doing the whole organization. Oh, everyone did a good job. I'm specifically asking you about Mike McCoy.
I don't think they went out and won one for the Gipper. I don't.
It's an impressive victory speech after, though. I enjoyed it.
I thought he did fine.
Yeah.
You know, the
I mean, there's some cringy victory speeches around the NFL,
quick aside,
man.
The public victory speech has ruined the victory speech. I actually read, I think Diana Rossini wrote it, that like a coach admitted like driving to the team hotel or whatever, he kind of was thinking about what he would say if they won, because now that team social media has made it public, it's performative.
Yeah.
As opposed to natural. Just another thing ruined by, hey, teams, you don't have to make it public. You could let the coach be himself behind closed doors. But no, I have to keep up with the Joneses and the Chargers and make it public.
Did you just say ruined? There's an I in that word. Ruined. Yeah. Why do you struggle with the English language to the extent that you do?
He speaks the king's language, and he has the king's disease.
That is true. It's gout, not goot, or whatever you would call it.
How the Canadians say it.
Yeah, that's true. I got the goot. I better get out of here. I got some goot, guys. I never thought about that.
Yeah, I miss the early days of when the Lions first started to win and the Dan Campbell victory speeches were in the locker room. Because he used to just list off, like, it was like 15-minute long speeches. And on the 2nd and 7 in the second quarter, a great block to shield off that run there from David Montgomery. Good stuff.
See, some of those are good. Like, his are, obviously, there's been some good ones. Vrabel here.
Efficient.
I forget what the one game was, but they had the game where they played the, right? And it was like, they played, like, some song, and he just danced around like an idiot.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was just...
natural.
He wasn't, and Vrabel probably doesn't give a crap about the social media is in or not. But I think that's a really good point that these coaches feel like they have to do something
and now top the next guy and all that.
Yeah,
you know who's the worst victory speech giver in the league by far?
Matt LaFleur.
Matt LaFleur, he's awful.
I knew you were going to say
that. I'll tell you though, I'm going to take responsibility.
He has a lot of opportunities by the way.
I'm going to take responsibility for his good one because I told him. This city will burn if you come here and win with Malik Willis. And he told me not only did he use that in the locker room. And
Video?
I don't know that there's video, but he told me at the owner's meeting, he had matches and he was trying to burn whatever he's holding in his hand to like make his point. They said the city would burn if we came here and won with Malik Willis. And he was trying to like light on fire the script that he was holding.
See what I'm talking about?
I thought it was funny as hell.
Now I'm on Robbie's fire LaFleur team.
Yeah, LaFleur. Fire him 3 weeks ago. Now, gotta sign him.
None of this matters.
No, he's still down on him.
The only thing that matters.
He's still down on him.
He is, but I think Packer Nation feeling a little bit better.
They are. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Paul Kuharski with us the rest of the show. We got a lot of things on the Titans front to get into. We welcome your questions as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com with us here on the program.
Hey, see this YouTube comment, Robbie?
No.
It says, PK is a chief spokesperson hired to toe the Titans' party line.
That's what I think of when I think of PK.
What do you think about that, PK? Your reaction. That's thoughts.
First thing that
your thoughts, PK.
I think there are stupid people everywhere.
Are you suggesting this person's stupid?
No, I'm not suggesting it.
That's the first thing I think of when I think of Kuharski is Titans' spokesperson.
Yep. Yeah, well, you know, Brinker can do no wrong per PK.
Yeah, that's what I say.
So, as you mentioned, Tony Pollard's performance, not only the output and what he did from a yardage standpoint, he broke off a 62-yarder, 32-yarder for a touchdown. Like, he was really, really good in that game. And he did it against a defense that heading into the game was the number 2 defense in the National Football League. So, I mean, you brought up Corey Levin, which I think definitely deserves a shout out here, but how did the Titans pull that off? Like, how did the Titans go from not being able to run the ball basically at all season long, to that performance on Sunday against a very, very good defense?
I don't know. Well, I mean, the one thing that Skoronski said, and he and J.C. Latham and Dan Moore all kind of hit on it in some way, shape, or form, is that they were really pissed off about the previous week against the Jaguars and that carried through the preparation week, and that there was kind of like a mindset and a determination to not get embarrassed by the Browns and to let Garrett do his thing and to get back to running the ball. Now, I don't know where this mindset has been and why they've been incapable of showing us at least a degree of what they showed us against Cleveland. But finally, they had some motivation across the front five and beyond. I mean, the backs were excellent. The tight ends were excellent. The receivers downfield were excellent. The receivers still on the screens, just, I mean, close to the line of scrimmage, wide, don't block well. But I just there was a totally different kind of mindset, and I don't know where how they found it, and I don't know if they can sustain it. But for those 3 hours, which was really felt more like 3:45, I don't know what the game time was.
It did drag.
The first quarter of some second window games was over before the Titans game was over. They found it, and they played like a team with the what's been the traditional Titans mentality and method to win.
Yeah, there's no excuse for that to not be a weekly thing, and they should be pissed all the time about how bad they are. But I do feel like – I feel like, I mean, last week – we and I'm sure everybody else in town were like, yeah, Myles Garrett's going to have about 8-10 sacks, right? So you know that's part of this.
I did say one thing, like oftentimes when we pick a player and say he's going to go crazy against them, it doesn't unfold the way you think.
Right.
I didn't think Garrett was necessarily going to have 8 sacks. I thought the Browns would find a different way to dominate them defensively and that they you know, that Garrett wouldn't go insane. But I didn't envision anything like this.
Tony Pollard just dominating a game.
Well, they scored 31 points in the game, which, as you two both know, it's darn near impossible over the last couple years to get into the 30s. And they did so with their quarterback, I think, being average at best in the game. Like, yeah. You know, he's 14 of 28, missed a couple throws that you can't miss in the NFL.
Red zone throws, and that's the difference between 3-7.
Yeah, exactly.
So, But
that made he put 31 points up in the game. PK, you know, obviously a lot of people that we've heard from this week, you look at the stat line from Ward, you look at the stat line from Sanders, and it's like, wow, Sanders heavily outplayed Ward in the game. Obviously, the Titans' defense is not the Browns' defense, and we know that. We know the Titans specifically on the back end, pretty limited in what they've got on the defensive side of things back there. Jeffrey Simmons, outstanding in the game, 10 pressures on the quarterback, so – that was good to see, but what did you make of the Sanders versus Ward performance and the discourse that has emerged since then?
Yeah, look, Sanders made some plays for sure, and I don't parse the box score. You know, the box score is the box score. The stats are the stats. You know, there were some drops that hurt Cam. There was more reliability on the Sanders side, which helped him, and a lot of yak that helped him. Counts the same, right? But if you look at the second half of that game where the Titans largely gained control, here's what the Browns did. Punt, 7 plays punt, 3 plays punt, 3 plays punt, 4 plays interception, 3 plays punt, 1 play fumble, 6 plays blocked punt. Then 5 touchdowns, 7 touchdowns. So if
which
was
a lot of good Sanders stuff
right
in there.
But if you really get into the nuance of the game, there is a good stretch of the game where he and that offense did nothing. Nothing. It might have been stats that came out of it. And those last 2 touchdown drives were not unfamiliar, like Cam Ward has. He's not gathered stats by any means, but some of his best play has come late in games when the Titans are behind 2 scores and the defensive mentality changes. And again, it counts in the box score the same. There's no column for, like, down 2 scores playing against a softer defense. But those last 2 drives were down 2 scores playing against a softer defense.
Was the context
important. Well, it's a soft defense, period. Yeah.
I mean, the Cam Shadur stuff, whatever. But I do hope that you can at least sit here as someone who's a Shadur hater who thinks he shouldn't even be in the league and admit that he's got the chance to be a quarterback.
He's got a chance to be a quarterback. But I don't think that game was like overwhelmingly like, oh my God, Shadur. He made some dangerous throws. He had guys make plays for him. He threw some short stuff that went long. I didn't look at that and go, oh my God, this guy's going to be an unbelievable quarterback in this league.
No, but he made a couple big time throws.
Yeah, he did.
And then in the red zone, he made more.
But the national reaction is ridiculous from people who didn't watch.
But
the
again,
game
the reaction. The but the reaction to him, either way, is ridiculous. It's pure hatred. No, I don't. All I've said is I liked him of the quarterbacks because he's
slurp.
No, he's accurate. I like accuracy. Accuracy is good. I agree. His pick was terrible in the second half, and they probably win that game if he doesn't throw that pick.
He did have a 54.8% completion percentage in that game.
Accuracy. Yeah. I love accuracy.
So you're watching him play and you don't think he throws an accurate football? I mean, that's the difference between him and Cam Moore. 54%
is 54%. That's what I think about his accuracy.
Right, but when we talk about the yard, yeah, you're not a yak in there and, you know, it's soft defense. And okay. So, again, you put conditions on the good stuff, but, it's 54%. That's all it is. Okay. That's fine. I know how you argue.
I said the box score is the box score.
We've seen it. We all know. That's fine.
He had an excellent statistical game. But also, I put the conditions mostly, and I know you think this is crazy, on the thing that goes in the most important document, the standings. And it went down as a win in the Titans side.
That is true.
There you go.
Weston Hermitage says, Cam looked horrible in this win. I'm starting to really lose hope for him. His ball's just not accurate. He's missing throws he should make. Other than Josh Allen, how many other quarterbacks really improve their accuracy to the next level?
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
But we've said he needs an off-season mechanical breakdown rebuild that has to come directed at the orders of the new coach, the new coordinator, the new quarterback coach. If he's got a chance, it starts with that.
I would agree. I mean,
I agree with you.
It's good.
It's as simple as that. And we thought that was coming, but the first off-season is always rough. It's short.
Yep.
You don't have that much time. And you hoped he was better at those things. And he gets rewarded for making off-script plays where occasionally those mechanics, he overcomes the mechanical stuff with a quick release and a very clever, you know, back across his body throw to a guy who's smart enough to get wide open for him. And I think subconsciously thinks, well, the mechanics didn't matter there.
Well, and he still will also at times stand in there and rip a throw that's just
perfect. Yeah. I mean, the Van Jefferson throw was
just
perfect.
Not consistent.
Somebody
enough.
In town saying it's not on target. Well, there's a freeze frame of it, you know, perfectly placed on
that's a great throw.
Van Jefferson's hand, and Van Jefferson said you can't get a better throw.
Yeah. No, thought it was a really good throw. Caleb asking if we could send Cam Ward to the Manning Passing Academy this offseason. Cam, we got some work for you out there.
You can go be a counselor.
Did you get this nice big vat of RC Cola before the game on Sunday? I saw Andrew tweet out a photo of it.
I tweeted it out as well. This was a pending disaster in the press box. Now, listen, I am not one. Andrew does this. Andrew's new generation, you know, and critiques free food. You know, this is code breaking. They give you free food. You'd be grateful and you shut up. But I was in the press box in Cleveland, and they have a weird array of sodas that are not mainstream sodas. And all three coolers, refrigerators, have no caffeinated beverage. Now, I'm not a coffee drinker, and I'm about to watch Titans Brown.
Yeah.
And I've had no caffeine, and I am in a state of panic. Joe knows this. The hour before kickoff in an NFL press box is the slowest hour in the history of mankind. And I'm like, what am I going to do here with no caffeine? So I meet the guy who's kind of seems to be like running the food service thing. And I'm like, hey, is there any chance there's any caffeinated beverages anywhere? And he's like, are there no colas out there? And I said, no. So he goes into the room and he comes out and he's got like the box that has the sodas in it.
Yeah.
But they're warm RC colas. And so I'm
no
like,
Coke or Pepsi, huh?
No.
Just RC cola.
Yeah. So he gives me two RC colas and he's like, do you want ice? And I'm like, I would kill for ice, dude. And so he's like, I'll take care of you. So I'll be right here. So I'm standing like, you know, watching pregame show, holding two RC colas. I'm there for about 5 minutes. I look over and the dude's over there rapping with the two women who are making omelets. And I'm like, oh my God, it doesn't look good for me getting ice. So I go over and I say, hey, still got a chance of that ice? And he goes, oh, yeah, sorry. And so he goes down the hallway and he disappears into like another food service hallway. And I went down there to wait. And I'm watching the things again and whatever. And I'm waiting like 7 minutes this time. And I'm like, this isn't really going to be
a lot of effort.
I'm drinking warm cola. He comes out with an ice bucket, tongs, the ice bucket full of ice, tongs, and two big plastic glasses with my RCs. So I go back to press row with this thing under my arm, and I'm like,
Make way, boys.
Bottle service.
I got bottle service.
Paul Kaharsky bottle service.
And so I downed those two things during the first half. It was wide awake.
I mean, is Cleveland in Middle Earth? They can't find a Coke or a Pepsi? What's going on around here?
I don't remember that being a thing.
The omelet was also burnt, but I don't critique these things.
Yeah, like no, me. You don't. You know.
We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Stepping in puddles, stepping in turds. You know, these things happen. Sit on somebody else's wet or dry butt juice?
Kick my ass. Enjoy. Come on. I'm not asking. I'm telling with this. Kick my ass.
Yeah, the average parent age in Killam, Mississippi is probably about 14, so family ties. Those matter. Blood's thicker in the water.
Because I told them this city will burn if you come here and win.
I remember that
with
one.
Malik Willis.
They told me this city was going to burn if we came in here and won the game, so I guess it is.
My joints are all fine.
I smoke weed constantly.
All yucking around with Terry Bradshaw forever ago, right? Two for one. Punch me, too.
It is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. Paul Kuharski with us on the program. Taking your thoughts to the rest of the show. Joe, the floor is yours.
Thank you for that, official Artie Fufkin. You have seen This Is Spinal Tap, right, Paul Kuharski?
Oh, yes, yeah. Multiple times.
Artie Fufkin, man.
How bad is the sequel?
It's actually really bad that I haven't seen it.
You were going to go in
the
theater.
I know. I was going to go to the theater.
I was going
to
watch it on a plane, but I got distracted with something else.
Yeah, that's part of the...
Or I think it didn't time up well enough. I hate to be on a plane, watch a movie, and then you cut off 17 minutes before the end of it, and you never see it.
Yeah, that's part of the holiday plan. Also, I guess Stranger Things, got to catch up on that, because what? Are you guys Stranger Things watchers? No. Yeah. Not at all? No.
I watched a little bit of it.
Have they gone
But the series where they go 5 years between seasons.
Yeah. Well, now they have this final season that they're doing. So they did Thanksgiving. So my kids.
30-year-old kids now.
My kids have watched it, but they're going to rewatch with me next week. And then they come out with another part
Christmas
of it on
and
Christmas
New Year.
Eve. And then the finale is actually in the theaters on New Year's Eve, apparently.
I don't know.
That's an
interesting rollout.
You're a sucker for sticking with all of them.
It's good. I mean, it's just like a lot of stuff. Like, the first season is by far the best, you know, but it's still,
then
I like
invest.
It. Yeah. We can get back in the NFL if you guys want, but I have to go back to Notre Dame here for a minute. Like, of all the stuff, and by the way, you got Brett Yormark of the Big 12 is now blasting Pete Bavakwa. The Notre Dame AD, Pete Bavakwa, I mean, he has said some. First of all this stuff about the ACC, you know, how dare you, the ACC, because the ACC put on a loop. They played Miami and Notre Dame over and over again on the ACC network.
Yeah.
Well, Miami is an ACC football team, and Notre Dame isn't
full
member. Have you not noticed that? So what are they supposed to do? I mean, who are they going to advocate for? And also, has Notre Dame ever, with any of the success it's ever had in football, because by the way, their scheduling has been, the ACC has helped them. They've been able to get Clemson on there, Florida State, whatever. Have they ever said, "Well, the ACC really helping us out"? They wouldn't give a shred of credit to the ACC ever.
Never.
But this one takes the cake, and I had it up on my phone, and now I've lost it.
Of course.
Yeah, I know. Pete Bavakwa said yesterday that we had one of the greatest 10-game stretches in the history of college football.
Oh,
he actually said that. One of the greatest 10-game stretches in the history. There are like four or five 10-game stretches this year that are better than Notre Dame's 10-game stretch that he said was one of the greatest 10-game stretches in the history of college football. Like, they beat USC, and they blew out terrible teams.
This is who they played in that 10-game stretch. Purdue, Arkansas, Boise State, NC State, USC, Boston College, Navy, Pittsburgh, Syracuse, Stanford.
Come on. You can't just say things. There should be massive, massive pushback crushing this guy.
Well, he's a
Shut up, Notre Dame. Shut up.
And again, I'm glad to hear. I know Marcus Freeman said this. Yeah, like Notre Dame is like Marcus Freeman makes them like harder to hate than like most of the history of Notre Dame football, unless you're a Notre Dame fan. And I am glad that he said, no, this is like, it's not like this is going to be the trend. You know, like we're just never going to bowl games if we don't make the playoff. So that's good. But again, I at some point, it's kind of like when Lane Kiffin left Ole Miss and everybody's quiet. And then all of a sudden here and there, a player tweets like, yeah, Lane, that's, you're full of crap. That's not what happened. I really would like to hear from the entirety of the Notre Dame football team where, again, a whole bunch of guys had the terrible news about the playoff, but then just had their careers cut short. Their career's just over.
Yeah.
Career's over. No 15 practices. No more, you know, I mean, you play 12, 13 games in a calendar year. You say all the time, PK, right? People want to talk about anything or care about things other than actual football. There's so little actual football. And these guys just aren't going to play that last football game. There is no way that is a unanimous team decision. No way at all. So, again, let's talk about student-athlete experience and, you know, let's talk about, you know, pouring into the kids and all that stuff. No, you decided to be a petty little bitch and pull out of your bowl game, and now you're sitting here crying and saying ridiculous stuff because this is just a power play between TV executives.
And, I mean, I know you guys have talked about it. I heard you talk about it. They're kids on that team. This would have been their last football game. So they played their last football game without knowing they played their last football game.
That's what
game.
I just said.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying what I just said.
That's the biggest slight. I'm happy to repeat a rare good point that you made. That's the biggest slight to the most important people who you've left out of this. Now there's a report that ESPN is going to lose $30 to $35 million from Notre Dame not being in the Pop-Tart Bowl. I find that number hard to believe, first off. Secondly, while ESPN's, you know, not as lucrative a business as it used to be, I think that they can survive that hit in these circumstances.
By the way, on the Notre Dame front again, this is two straight years because I know every year, no matter what happens in the playoff, there are going to be people saying, well, the committee just does what ESPN wants, and they just, they're looking for the money. Well, again, SMU was in over Alabama last year. I promise you that keeping Notre Dame out of the playoff is not an ESPN-friendly. I promise you ESPN executives are like, oh, crap, when ESPN was kept out. So, like, let's rip the committee. The committee deserves to be ripped. They say dumb things. Whatever they're doing, I have no idea. They're watching film, and they're looking for, like, how the box safeties compare. But, like, they're not, like, millionaire coaches who are retired are not listening to some ESPN guy say, hey, man, you need to put Notre Dame in because, you know, the ratings and stuff. Like, they're not doing that. So can we at least agree on that or no? Is that possible?
It seems, too, that America, my sense is, and I overrate Twitter because that's where I get America's impression of
things. We all do.
All right. But America seems to have come to terms with Notre Dame not being what it once was. Right?
I would agree.
So why has America come to terms with that, but they haven't come to terms with it with the Cowboys or the Yankees?
That's a good question. That is a good question.
They aren't what they once were, but they do get $50 mil all on their own from NBC every year for their games.
They do. 615-737-1025, our phone number. One more hour with Kuharski coming up next. A lot more on the Titans front to get into. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.